as usual for the last couple of weeks, we started this show talking a little bit about Ivan's impending delivery, and talked about whether or not he'd be here next week for the show, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Ivan's son was born on Wednesday, August 1st, at 19:15 Universal Time. That's 3:15 p.m. Eastern Time. So congratulations very much to Ivan. The baby's name is Manuel Andres Bo Venegas, if I'm saying that right. Baby was born by C-section, and everybody's doing fine. His wife is recovering. Ivan is himself also recovering, because sometime during the event, Ivan fell, and he's now on crutches. In any case, we wish the whole family well. I don't know yet whether or not they will be with us for the next show or not. But congratulations to Ivan and his family, and welcome to Little Manuel. And for the meantime, what a phrase. Anyway, I mangled everything. In the meantime, here's the show that Ivan and I recorded on Sunday, the 29th of July. And here we go. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It's Sunday, July 29th, 2012, as we record this. I'm Sam Minter. Ivan Bo is here. Hello, Ivan.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
And I guess if things go according to schedule, I'll be doing a solo show next week.
What is that? Oh, no. Probably not. We're not supposed to get to the hospital until 3. It's the current schedule. Okay, so that's noon here. The hospital is like 10 minutes away.
Uh-huh. All right. So you're going to sit here, do the podcast with me, and then go right to the hospital?
Well, about an hour and a half later, too.
Okay.
Listen, I don't know.
Your schedule to be induced, but it could happen earlier.
It could happen earlier. But the schedule right now is for us to go to the hospital at 3 o'clock. Okay, and to spend the night there, and then on Monday morning for it to be induced.
Okay.
So that's why I'm saying, I've got the bag ready.
Okay.
I got the stroller in the car. I've got the car seat in the car.
You're ready to go.
I've got everything all right now, as of now, ready to roll. In order for me to just grab a bag, I got my clothes are in that bag. I got everything ready. Just go over there. And, I mean, the hospital is 10 minutes away from my house. Okay? It's like, you know, it's very close. So it's not like I don't have a long drive. I mean, you know. So
Very good.
Yeah. So I should be, you know, unless something unexpected happens, which obviously
can always happen. Yep.
Right? But I should be all ready to roll. Okay? So I should be okay. Okay? That's my expectation.
So, in other news, a few weeks ago here, we were talking right here on the podcast about how, you know, you kept your computers for 5 years, and, you know, you were going to make this one last a little bit longer, and then this morning, right before the show, I see something on Facebook, you got a new computer.
Yes, I did. So, I finally just said, you know what, Mad Lion came out, and I talked to my wife, and here's the thing that we talked about. Look, okay, if I waited until after the baby was born, probably, then we wouldn't do shit. Okay? Then who knows how long. So we said, I actually got an opportune boost in our cash flow.
Okay.
Saving some money on some stuff that we didn't expect to be saving money on. And Apple's got 12 months zero interest financing right now on purchases. And since we have that savings on the one end, I figured that we could apply that cash towards the new computer, which honestly we needed. I mean, it's just, you know, my wife accidentally fucked a little bit the keyboard on my laptop. You know, and made typing be quite annoying.
I understand how that happens.
And, you know, so I've got, so let's see. So I wind up with a 6-year-old computer with a fucking keyboard that is driving me crazy. I got a fucking 8-year-old computer that was working well, but the thing is that, you know, it was old as old shit. Okay. And, you know, I said, I mean, okay, this is, we talked about it and we said, my wife actually has come down to the point that, you know, she's got an iPad and she wants an iPhone more. She wants to sit down on a fucking computer. She wants a big fucking screen. Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
She does not want the laptop screen. There's no point. She said, if I got a small screen, I'll use the fucking iPad.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I got an iPad, I got an iPhone. If I want smaller screens, I got something that I can sit in front of a fucking TV and look at stuff. But if I want to use a computer, I want to use a fucking computer. Okay? So we talked about it. Plus, we realized that there's ways to access even remotely on your iPad or whatever applications you have on the Mac.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of stuff. Plus, here's the other thing. We have all these mobile devices that now sync up together with our computer, right? So
yep.
We're syncing up to the notebook. But the problem is that meant the notebook had to be on all the time. If it wasn't, then it wouldn't sync.
Yeah.
So and that was annoying as well. So you know what? It wound up to the point they said, "Screw this, we're getting an iMac."
There you go.
So we both sat down. We went over it, made the options, and that's what it came down to.
Did you max out memory and hard drives and stuff, or did you?
I got 12 gigs of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
1 terabyte hard drive, and I got the whatever with the fastest processor that was available.
Excellent.
7. I mean, you had to order it. And I was like, ah, fuck it, whatever. I'll get the iPad.
Okay. Cool. Well, enjoy your new computer. Now, I like you said, you had to get it, but like your timing's probably not great on this. iMacs are due to be refreshed any time now.
But you know, look, you know what it is. But that's always the case with everything. Okay, all right. I mean, it's one of those things where
Apple has a fairly consistent schedule on these kinds of things, though, so you can usually tell when something's overdue, and the iMac is way overdue at this point. So, you know, the rule always is, like, if you've got, like, discretion, you know, then you wait for the new one. But, like, if you need it because what you have just isn't doing the job anymore, and you need it, well, you get what you get, you know, because you can't wait.
And the other part was, let's face it, if we made it after the baby was born, we were gonna be so fucking like immersed in that you know we weren't gonna do it.
Right.
We weren't gonna do it, because we'd be too fucking busy. And the other here's a problem that I discovered right now, which is what I'm battling with right now. Look, we had all these fucking computers with all this shit. And I had an old HP PC that I had with some information on it. I kept here, and I had this other machine and the other machine, and my wife was like, I want you to get rid of all those fucking computers, okay, all right? I want you to get rid of them and put everything on the Mac, okay, all right? Just get the machine, so it's migrate everything. So I've been migrating information, everything over into... It's not a problem, but I'm just is that I think HP...
Okay, Yvonne, you keep cutting out, so why don't we take a break, and we'll figure that out, and we'll be back. Okay, we're back. Yvonne seems to have fixed his issues. You were using the wrong microphone.
Yes, I was using the wrong fucking microphone.
Well, whatever microphone you were using was crap.
Well, it was the built-in microphone.
Well, see, that shouldn't be a problem. You know,
but I was, but I was looking away from the computer. I was looking at the other computer. So therefore, that's probably why it made.
Oh, right. So like it kept cutting out because it didn't think you were there. Because
that's exactly right.
It tries to do the smart thing and like cut out really low sounds. So whenever you got below a certain volume, it would just cut you out.
That's right.
Okay.
So, yeah, okay, so that's what was happening.
Anyway,
okay.
finish talking about your computer real quick, and then we can get to the real agenda of the show.
PC is like, giving me problems, that HP PC, and I had a whole bunch of, like, old information that I kept that I had on Windows, okay, on there, okay? Like, I had, like, I don't know, I have some tax information, performance evaluations, a whole bunch of shit like that that I wanted to save, okay? Personal stuff from my old work, okay? All right? That's just my personal stuff, not private information, but, you know, my performance evaluations. I saved those.
Uh-huh, right.
I had, you know, some personal communications regarding my benefits, regarding my termination. My resignation letter was on there, like, a whole bunch of shit. And I am, like, I'm trying to fucking this migration from this old computer, and I've had to reboot the damn thing, like, 6 times right now.
Right.
And I'm, like, you know, so I'm getting quite concerned at this point about it. Now, the hard drive seems to be intact, but still, anyway, it means that, you know, I don't know. This thing is just not cooperating at this point. So, anyway.
Yes, you'll get it done. And by the way, you mentioned it did not come with Mountain Lion.
It did not come with Mountain Lion, and I am like, really? No, I knew that that was the case. So that's not the problem. The problem is that I went to the Apple website to get, because I'm entitled to get a free copy of Mountain Lion.
Yeah.
And 2 things about it. The process is a pain in the ass, but the second thing is that the damn website wouldn't let me do it in the first place. It kept giving me some random error.
Yeah. So, yeah, they've been having some problems with that Mountain Lion up-to-date thing. But, like, you know, at the same time, I'm like, it's $20.
I know. And I've been thinking about that. I know. And I was like, yeah, it's $20, right? So, I agree. But I just, you know, I was still fucking annoyed. Because if I'm entitled to it free, why the fuck should I be paying $20 if I'm entitled to it?
Yeah, I know, I understand.
You know what I'm saying? So I go in here, and I'm entering my purchase details. Number of systems to qualify, 1. Apple retail store, okay, put the purchase date, and I hit continue over here. And it keeps saying that I have entered, please correct the fields mark in red. I don't understand. Number of qualifying systems for right to copy. I put in the number 1, and it keeps saying that I don't have the right information in there.
Maybe it's something like they just haven't processed your purchase yet because it was recent or something. I don't know.
I don't.
Of course, that kind of thing should be instant these days. There's no excuse for it.
Well, they registered my Apple, you know, my whatchamacallit,
I don't know what to tell you, Yvonne. And like,
AppleCare.
Frankly, I was planning to talk about Mountain Lion today too, because I was planning on installing it on my main machine at home yesterday. But yeah, a number of things happened. Blah blah blah. I didn't get around to it. So next week, both Yvonne and I will be on Mountain Lion, hopefully.
We'll see.
And maybe we'll talk about it then.
We'll see.
Anyway, so we have a real show. We've got a few additional topics. So we talked about all the lovely computer stuff. We're going to talk about election 2012 stuff. I'll give the quick update from my models. But then the main events of the day are Romney's been on a foreign tour that has not been going very well. And we got some feedback. We got some feedback with somebody pointing out an article for us on Romney. So we'll talk about that. And then Citigroup, Yvonne has some comments. A former Citigroup CEO is talking about how now Citigroup and others like it are too big to exist.
Right.
And finally, there was an editorial in the New York Times this morning, Sunday morning, about American schools being too hard.
Right.
Yes. Anyway, so those are our topics. We'll take another quick break, and we will be back to talk about election stuff after this. No, I'm not done talking. Yeah, I'm still talking for a little while longer.
Yes.
Yes, it's a robot. Okay, so election 2012. Let's start out with, I'll give my quick update on my electoral models. We'll start there. It has not been a good week for Romney.
Which a friend of mine amusingly challenged, but it's okay. He's a nice guy. I like him. Don't get me wrong, but he's just not very, very. He hates Obama, so he's not very objective. So
there's an interesting thing here going on, which is actually in the popular vote polls, it's been getting closer, and it looks like it's been a bad week for Obama. You know, if you look at like the Real Clear Politics average, it's tighter now.
Right, it is. Yeah.
But meanwhile, I'm doing my Electoral College analysis, and it's looking worse for Romney.
That's right.
And first of all, why the difference? And we'll bring this up every once in a while when we talk about this. First of all, and this is probably the biggest effect, to be honest. Let me just throw these out there. Number one is, of course, you're measuring something different.
That's exactly
right. The national popular vote is not how we do our elections in this country. So it may very well be that Romney is gaining lots and lots of support in Texas.
Right. But that doesn't really help him win the fucking election.
Because he's going to win Texas, and everyone knows he's going to win Texas. Texas isn't even close, so it doesn't really matter if he gains additional support in deeply red states. Similarly, if Obama loses some support in deeply blue states, that doesn't matter either. So, like, you know, if Obama has a little bit less support in New York than he did before, doesn't matter. He's going to win New York. So that's one factor. The other factor is just the state polls are a lot less frequent and take longer to react to changes. There are lots of states that aren't polled very much at all.
For example, who the fuck's going to be polling California? Everybody knows that Romney ain't winning California, by any chance. So most polls are focused, you know, lately on places that are closer or battlegrounds.
That's actually an interesting thing because that's not quite as true as you would think it was. Because California is actually polled, you know, more often than some other states. So is New York. New York gets at least one or two polls a month. Why? Why? Why does anybody bother? And the answer is because when they poll for something else, like a Senate race or whatever...
Quiet, Alex.
Right, because you might as well toss in the question on that. Right. Gotcha.
Meanwhile, there are other states that you would expect would be polled more often...
I would think a state like, for example, like Ohio, Tennessee, Nevada would get more polls.
So, and you'd be partially wrong. I'm trying to bring up my spreadsheet now so I can be more specific. But, you know, what's interesting is that the states that are being polled, they are polling the ones that they think will end up being decisive in the election. So you get a decent number of polls for Ohio and Florida. But the thing is, you get polls more often for states where Obama is ahead, but maybe Romney can pull him back, like Pennsylvania, Virginia, Michigan, places like this. Obama actually has a decent lead at the moment, but they still get polled more frequently than, say, places like Missouri, South Carolina, Arizona, where Romney has the same level of lead. But the thing is, because Obama's ahead, what happens to those states is less relevant. Because if Obama pulls those states in his direction, he gets a bigger win. But it doesn't change who wins. If Romney actually manages to pull back Virginia, Pennsylvania, Michigan to his side, it changes who wins.
Okay.
So it's interesting which states get polled and how. But, like, you know, California, for instance, actually a little less frequently than I thought, but, like, for instance, it had a bunch of polls in May. California was polled 4 times in May.
But how many times since May?
Once.
That's the thing.
So meanwhile, if we look at Florida, which is, of course, potentially once again going to be the swing state that makes a difference, It was pulled 5 times in July.
You see that and that's
four
my
times
point.
In
I mean,
June.
Yeah, I mean, who exactly? The pollsters spent zero. I mean, in the last 2 months, zero time pulling California. They know it's so fucking blue. What the fuck's the point? Okay, but they spent it here in Florida, where they know it could be, you know, decisive.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Ohio comparison 3 times in July, 4 times in June.
There you go.
But, you know, like I said, there's states that you would expect to be polled more often, you know, which, you know, to be fair, is probably going to go McCain, but the lead that the lead that Romney has in South Carolina is about the same level as the lead Obama has in Pennsylvania. But Pennsylvania is getting polled 3 or 4 times a month. South Carolina hasn't been polled at all since January.
But I'm going to say that, you know what, let's face it. I think that the pollsters are with the same intuition as probably I am. Even if Obama gets close, there's no fucking way he's winning South Carolina.
Well, again, the key is also, let's say he did.
Right.
All it means is he gets a bigger win.
Right.
Whereas if Romney can pull in Pennsylvania, that
right.
can change the winner from Obama to
exactly.
Romney. So
right.
that's why. So anyway, so you do see the differences in popular vote and this. And so
Let me remind everybody one thing. You know, everybody doesn't remember the guy that won the popular vote in 2000 was Al Gore.
Yes. So people say, and it is true that these two generally go hand in hand, generally. But about one, I think the ratio is now like 1 in 15 or 1 in 20, something like that, elections, they go in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's worth paying attention to. Now, if you see a popular vote lead of more than 3 or 4%, then
it's usually a runaway.
It's guaranteed. It's almost guaranteed. The Electoral College will go the same way. If you see the polls for the popular vote within, say, a percent, then there's a chance it'll flip. You know. So, but again, I look at it as the way we actually vote is the Electoral College. Let's look at the damn state by state polls. The biggest deficiency is they're not done as much every single day. There are popular vote polls done. You know, there are days we have no state polls, and we certainly aren't getting polls of every state every day, or even every close state every day. You know, like I said, Florida's an exceptionally tight thing. We're still only getting one poll a week, you know? Bottom line...
Well, that's one poll a week. I mean, that's...
Right, but compared to 3 or 4 polls a day for the national popular vote.
Well, yeah, but let's face it. I mean, you know, it's still early. I mean, we still got about 3 months to go, I'm sure, with...
It'll speed up.
You know, as time goes by, you know, we'll get more.
Anyway, what I'm seeing here in the Electoral College trend is movement in Obama's direction again. And my latest post that I made on this, I haven't done an update yet for Sunday, but I don't know if there'll be any changes today. As it turns out, this is Sam from the future. As it turns out, there were not any additional updates on Sunday the 29th when I was recording this. However, between then and now when I'm putting the show out, there was one critical update on Wednesday, August 1st. You'll hear me in the next few minutes talking about how Romney had a few bad weeks and the situation was getting, he'd given up the gains he'd gotten earlier. It got even worse for him. So check out my post, election2012.ablsme.com. That's ABULSME.com. For details of the update from Wednesday, basically Ohio started looking worse for Romney. I took it out of the states that he has a chance of winning category, which pushed it so that Romney's best case, if he won all of the close states, was still to lose the election with Obama 278, Romney 260. Anyway, don't know if that'll stick. It could reverse itself next week or next couple days. For the moment, that's where we are. Oh, and now back to the show, which was Romney had already had some bad updates, but not quite that bad. Okay, back to the thing. But the update that I posted on Saturday, July 28th, basically, look, the status is over the last from May to June, Romney was moving things in his direction. He didn't move any states actually across the line from from leaning Obama to leaning his way, but he took a whole bunch of states where Obama had a greater than 5% lead and pulled them in his direction. It went from, on May 16th, my model had Romney's best case, if he won every single close state, being still to lose 259 to 279. By the end of June, beginning of July, he was winning 311 to 227 in his best case, where he won all the close states.
Right.
So he had moved 52 electoral votes into his direction, at least bringing them into reach, making them contestable.
Right, right, right.
But in the last 2 weeks, Michigan, Virginia, and Wisconsin moved back to Obama leads greater than 5%. Nevada got closer again, so a little bit of compensation, but 33 fewer electoral votes, in reach, quote-unquote, for Romney. So his new best case is 278 to 260, winning 278 to 260, which is only 9 votes over what he needs to tie. So that means, at this point, Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, and Tennessee are now must-win states. He cannot win if he loses any one of those 4 states. Now, he's ahead in North Carolina and Tennessee, but he's behind in Florida and Ohio. He also can afford to lose only one out of Iowa, Nevada, and New Hampshire, and he's behind in all 3 of those states. And then finally, if he won everything else but lost Colorado, we'd actually have that 269 to 269 tie throwing things into the House of Representatives, which would be really fucking cool, but unlikely. And he would probably win in that case because the House is Republican leaning. Anyway, that's the status update for the election. It's been looking bad for Romney the last couple weeks. We'll see. There's, you know, I think I posted earlier in the week. You know, the line is always that there's still a lot of time before the election. And that's absolutely true. But there's a lot less time than there used to be.
Yeah, I know. So it's you know, I mean, I think, like I think we said the last week. I mean, during talking this week, look, it's looking pretty darn solid in Romney's direction. I mean, Romney's in Obama's direction right now.
It is. Although, what's interesting is, you know, you listen to the pundits talking about it, and they're all about how close a race it is.
And I'm like, let's face it. They're paid on TV to do this. I mean, if they said the race was over, I mean, you know, what the heck? I mean, you know.
And again, we've said plenty of times, you know, Obama screws up the right things and his lead can disappear in a week, overnight. You know, it can evaporate. You know? But, you know, I think you summed it up well last time. This is Obama's to lose. It's not Romney's to win.
Yep, pretty much.
Obama can fuck this up and cause himself to lose. But
Romney is not doing a good job of, like, giving some space for Obama to fuck up. I mean, he keeps going. I don't understand. It's like we're talking about this stupid overseas trip that he just did.
Let's go ahead and switch to that. Let's take a quick break. Just to take a quick break. And then let's shift gears, and we'll talk about Romney in his wonderful overseas trip where he's making so many people happy.
Da-da-da.
Okay, back after this.
Bing. Entering your conference account information.
Okay. They're calling this Romney Shambles.
Romney Shambles.
Romney Shambles. I think it was a reporter from The Guardian who first named it that. But let me bring up a summary first of the stuff that was in London, because that's where all this started. Apparently, he's messing up Israel too now. But as you know, I should have looked this up during the break, but of course I didn't. So talk for a second, Yvonne.
Well, so Romney goes to like every presidential candidate when they go and they start being questioned. Well, what are your credentials about international foreign policy? So they think that taking some fucking like goodwill tour like around the world is the brilliant idea in order to do this, right? So he goes over to the UK. So the first thing he does when he gets to the UK is start mouthing off and saying, since he was Mr. Olympics, right? Oh, well, this city doesn't look ready for the fucking Olympics.
Something even before that. So I got up a summary that somebody put together of, like, the whole time.
Okay, what did he do before that?
The first thing that became sort of a brush-up was he started his first day in London by meeting with the head of MI6.
Okay.
And then he went out to the press and said so. And apparently, this is a major faux pas in Britain, because MI6 is like a super secret agency. You're not supposed to talk about meeting with those people. You're not supposed to, you know, any briefing that he got was supposed to be completely private. So this is considered like on the same level as, well, maybe not quite the same level, but like, It's these kind of conversations are supposed to be secret. You're not supposed to talk about them. You're not supposed to. And he got done with his briefing or whatever, and the first thing he's like, yeah, I just talked to the head of MI6, and it was nice to have this meeting, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, immediately people were jumping on him and complaining about this because that was a major breach of protocol. And some people have pointed out that, you know, Romney's been... on Obama, one of the things he's been getting on Obama about is, you know, the leaks to the press and keeping things secret that aren't. And, you know, he goes to something that's supposed to be secret, and next thing he's doing, he's blabbing on TV about it 10 seconds later. So that was number one. Second is that he gave an interview where someone asked about the Olympics, and the quote was, you know, it's hard to know just how well it'll turn out. There are a few things that were disconcerting. The stories about the private security firm not having enough people, the supposed strike of the immigration and custom officials. That obviously is not something that is encouraging. That was his quote. Now, it is important to point out at this point that absolutely right. Yeah, there's nothing he said that was inaccurate. There was a lot of doubt. The British press was... I've been listening to the BBC... And they were all about how there were all kinds of troubling things about,
I've shown up I went to a wedding many years ago. Well, I'm not going to say whose. I spent a whole ton of money at it. And, the food wasn't very good. And the wedding is extremely expensive. Okay. Now, right. Everybody at the wedding knew the food wasn't very good. I'm sure that the guy who held the wedding knew that the wedding wasn't very good. However, do you really go to the fucking owner, the guy that paid for the fucking wedding, and tell him that the food sucked? No.
You didn't?
No. It's a faux pas, okay? It doesn't matter. I mean, you know, didn't he learn that at some point?
You'd think, but maybe not. What people keep bringing it up to is your guest in their house.
Right.
You know, and the wedding example is fine, but it's like coming over to somebody's house and they're having you over and they're doing a nice thing and all you're doing is
spilling in the corner. And hey, you know, these drinks are watered down.
Yeah. And oh, God, this house sucks.
Right.
You know?
Even if it does suck, you still don't tell them.
You'd be polite about it, you know?
Right. If the guy goes and says, yeah, you know, the place really sucks and whatever, you know. Okay, but jeez.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I guess, you know, he can claim the special relationship, because I guess, like, if you were going over and if it was, like, your best friend and you were really tight with them and blah, 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 you might pull him aside and say, hey, you know, you should do something about that paint.
Yeah.
But, you know, still. So everybody got all offended. So the Prime Minister, David Cameron, who's a conservative Prime Minister, by the way, although it is worth saying, conservatives in Great Britain are nothing like, you know, the Republicans here. The conservatives in Great Britain are practically to the left of the Democrats.
Oh, they're fucking left-wing liberals to them.
compared to the U.S. political spectrum, even the conservatives in Great Britain are to the left. But but having said that, the conservative prime minister, the first in, you know, many years, responded by noting that the Romney-headed Salt Lake City Games, it must have been, quote, easier if you hold an Olympic Games in the middle of nowhere. Because he pointed out, of course, London is one of the busiest cities in the world, blah, blah, blah. But basically, he just slapped Mitt Romney down.
Right.
By the way, I'm using as reference here a summary that was posted by Hunter on Daily Kos on Thursday, July 26th.
Okay.
And then in turn, the mayor of Salt Lake City apparently offered to send David Cameron a map. I'm not sure that helped anything.
This is really fucking great.
Then Mitt Romney apologized, which is something that, by the way, he's been hammering Obama on, saying you should never apologize for, you know, things as president of the United States.
And so he started by apologizing already.
So he apologized. then he was meeting the leader of the opposition Labor Party. And when it came time for him to make his comments, forgot the guy's name.
Oh, God.
He ended up calling him Mr. Leader because he couldn't remember the name.
Look,
I couldn't tell you the guy's name right now either.
You're meeting with him there. So usually, you know, when I go to a meeting that's important, usually, like, when it's a guy I haven't met, I go and I say, what's his fucking name? I go and it's like, George. It's like, I mean, you know, it's one of those little, like, important things.
Yeah, I don't know. He could say, I didn't forget. I just meant to call him Mr. Leader. I don't know. I haven't watched the video. Apparently, it's fairly apparent that he's called him Mr. Leader because he couldn't remember the name. Then, you know, he started talking about visiting 10 Downing Street and that he went, you know, that it wasn't something like it wasn't just a door, but it's got a backside, too. And the backside is very nice.
Oh, God.
Now, in Britain, backside means ass.
Ass.
Now, backside means ass here, too, of course, but, like...
Yeah, but it's not... It's like, you know...
But apparently very specifically means the body part.
Yes, exactly. Correct.
You know, and also, you know, 10 Downing Street, and again, I'm reading from Daily Kos, the article by Hunter. It's often used, just like people say, you know, the White House said this or that. They do the same thing for 10 Downing Street. So 10 Downing Street said this or that. So basically, you know, he's talking about, it can be this, like, it could be the spokesman at 10 Downing Street, not 10 Downing Street itself. So it sounds like he's talking about the spokesman's ass.
That's just funny. I mean, I get it. That was just funny. Okay. Well, you know, I think it was Bush Senior that went down to...
And gave everybody the finger?
Gave everybody the finger in Australia during a parade.
Yeah, because the... Yeah, it's a different hand symbol.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yes. So. Yeah.
So he was giving him the victory sign or something.
He was trying to give him the victory sign, but if you do the victory sign, I can't remember facing which way. It means giving him the finger.
Yeah. Anyway.
The Australians just thought it was hilarious, you know, because they know, you know, what it meant, but, you know, it was just funny, you know.
So then as we continue the storytelling here, because this is just funny. I'm sorry. I know. In the end, like, this is going
to
wash over.
But the point
like
is that but this is the whole point of it. You're supposed to go on one of these trips and honestly just look presidential and not, you know, come off like this.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, on the one hand, these are a bunch of little stupid gaffes. But on the other hand, the end result of this is, you know, the entire population of Great Britain
thinks you're an idiot.
Thinks he's an ass and is now spending their time making fun of him.
Right.
And you know, before this started, they probably, you know, didn't know much about him, didn't really care that much. They weren't even thinking about it much. Now, when they think Mitt Romney,
they think idiot.
They think idiot. They think ass. They think what a jerk, you know? And so this is a great way to kick off the special relationship with Great Britain. So the reaction, like I said, it went from they started mocking him, like the people were calling it a total car crash. People were saying worse than Sarah Palin. The mayor of London tweeted, "Can this get any worse for Romney?" This is somebody else tweeting about the mayor. Can this get any worse for Romney? Boris is now mocking him in front of 60,000 people in Hyde Park. And this is where the mayor of London basically said, there's a guy named Mitt Romney who says we're not ready. And then everybody boos. And then he's like, are we ready? And everyone cheers, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then finally, to finish off London, he had a fundraiser with employees from Barclays, which, of course, is embroiled in the whole scandal right now.
Right, and a whole LIBOR scandal.
Yeah, so,
dear Lord.
And, like I said, apparently, he's having some issues in Israel now, too. And this has just started, so yeah, maybe it's a little early, but, you know, basically he's put his foot in it saying if Israel has to take action on its own, actually it wasn't him himself, it was one of his advisors, briefing the press saying if Israel has to take action on its own, in order to stop Iran from developing the capability, the governor would respect that decision. Basically saying, you know, if Israel wants to attack Iran, even if the U.S. decides not to do it, if Israel decides to do it, the U.S. would support them, be on board, whatever, which is of course a change in policy, because right now it's been much more subdued, basically understanding that Israel does their own thing but encouraging them not to go out on their own, blah,
right,
blah, blah. But more importantly than that, the press then started asking for clarification, because, you know, the headlines started running like Reuters, Romney backs Israel if it needs to strike Iran. Bloomberg, Romney says he'd back unilateral strike. And so they were asking for clarification on this, because this is a change in what's been said before, even by the Romney folks, and it's a change from current policy. But nobody answered for hours. Most of his staff is still in Boston or was in meetings with Israeli leaders or whatever. So, like, nobody was answering these questions. This was brewing up into a firestorm. There was reaction coming from all kinds of places, you know, against this, blah, 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 blah. And then 3 hours later, aides distributed a comment clarifying the remarks or whatever. And so, again, it's like...
The great clarification tour. The Romney...
The clarification, which basically probably walks it back and says, you know, I didn't mean I'd, like, encourage them or whatever. Which, you know, of course, one of the things that, you know, if you remember, there was a thing before the first Iraq war where, you know, Saddam essentially asked for permission to invade Kuwait from the American ambassador. And the Americans didn't say yes, but also
didn't say no.
And so he took that as a green light and went right ahead. And that's why you're careful with this kind of crap, you know, because if you make statements that basically say, you know, the U.S. would not say anything bad about the Israelis attacking Israel, then Israel can fairly, you know, safely interpret that as, okay, we're all good, let's go. You know, so anyway, the whole point of the whole diplomacy thing, and like oftentimes I think it's really fucking silly the way people tiptoe around each other and don't just say what they mean, but frankly, there's a reason for it. And the reason for it is when people say exactly what they mean, they usually end up pissing each other off.
Yeah, that's part of the game.
You know, and so, you know, and I'm reading an article by Kevin Drums posted this morning, Sunday, July 29th, called Romney Shambles Continues in Israel. And, you know, he sums it up with, how could the Romney campaign possibly be this underprepared for its first big international outing? Dan Signor, one of the senior advisors, who's the one who messed up that Israel comment, has been involved with foreign policy for 2 decades. The Romney campaign is jam-packed with people who know the contours of Middle East policy and other diplomatic areas. They know what words you can use and which ones you can't. What the hell's going on? You know?
Well, but they've kept screwing up the whole way. I mean, think about it. I mean, you know, if you think about, honestly, this trip's a complete fucking disaster. Now, well, there was no major gaffe. The fact that instead of going out and just doing a trip where each is seen presidential and all it's stirred up is all of this shit. Okay.
Now, if you remember, at some point during the campaign in 2008, Obama went on an international tour and was like treated as a rock star.
Right.
You know? And people were like, "Oh, Obama." Now, you'd never expect like a Romney to get that kind of thing, but you can expect him.
But just not the fuck up everywhere.
Yeah, not to make people hate us.
Right.
You know, and this is the whole thing, and oh, surely the last 4 years haven't lived up to all the quote-unquote promise, but, you know, part of the thing with Obama was, you know, hey, George Bush, W, spent essentially 8 years pissing off the world.
Yep, very much.
You know, he took the reputation that we had internationally and flushed it down the toilet.
And
systematically, time after time,
and you know, sent us on a path to bankruptcy at the same time.
But then, you know, Obama was like, you know, being friendly to the international folks, recognizing they had concerns, blah blah blah. And you know, of course, it was pitched by the right as an apology tour and blah blah blah. But you know, the reality was it's mending fences,
right?
And he spent a few years doing that, and certainly he's pissed some people off too. But you can't avoid that being president.
Listen, you can't avoid that. I mean, in anywhere, okay? You know, if you're going to do a job at some point, you're going to piss off somebody.
But anyway,
okay?
But then this is like the opposite. This is like, you know, this is promising the world a return to W.
not exactly the message anybody was expecting.
So now here's the thing, though, and before we wrap up this topic. In terms of the election, this will probably have jack shit effect.
I agree, but I totally agree.
Because for the most part,
but my point about it is that it should have at least. You see, it didn't help at all. Okay,
no.
I mean, you could have turned this into at least something that at least was a photo op that you could have used later. Now you've turned it into fucking like, you know, you just wasted a whole fucking week. Basically.
And you probably gave some ammo to the Democrats to put
into the Democrats, yeah. I mean, it's a fucking disaster.
You know, but you know, the thing is, and I guess it does come down to swing voters and the small group of, I mean, because basically anybody who's already made up their mind, this isn't going to change their mind.
Right.
You know, so you still get down to those people in the middle who don't know what they're doing and don't pay much attention and won't pay much attention until October. And, you know, they may or may not be aware of this at all. And then the question is, how many people are like, oh my God, he was so incompetent internationally, he's going to get us in trouble.
Right.
Versus how many people are like, ah, see, he pissed off some foreigners? Who cares?
Who cares? Right.
Or right. Even good.
Right.
Damn foreigners, they deserve to be pissed off.
Right.
I don't know. Anyway, so I expect as a whole, it's going to be a wash and nobody's, you know, it's not going to have any sort of dramatic effect on the election itself. But in the meantime,
it could have been useful, and it turned into a fucking like waste of fuck, big waste.
I guess it does have an effect. If Romney wins, he starts off not in a good place internationally.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you're already behind the eight ball. You already fucking pissed everybody off. What are you going to do for an encore? shit. Yeah, well, that's where we are right now, basically.
Let's take a break, and we'll be back, and we'll talk about stuff. Citigroup and the American education system. We'll be right back.
You're in The Valley, AM 1620, and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on,
baby. Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance, and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and tune it up all the way.
I got a dance.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, here we are. You want to talk about education or Citigroup first?
Well, let's talk about the education op-ed. I don't know if, did you get a chance to read
it? I have not seen this. I have not seen this. So,
okay, well, let me pull it up here
right
real
now.
Quick. And to give you what it read, I don't even think I finished reading it because I got so pissed off that I just said, are you fucking kidding me? I mean, here, basically, is algebra necessary is the question. A typical American school day finds some 6 million high school students and 2 million college freshmen struggling with algebra in both high school.
What's the title of this?
That is algebra necessary.
That's the title of the article?
That's the title. It's written by Andrew Hacker. I have no idea who the hell this is. Okay, all right. But it was at the cover of the New York Times and is one of the op-eds for today. Okay? And it said, a typical American school day finds some 6 million high school students and 2 million college freshmen struggling with algebra. In both high school and college, all too many students are expected to fail. Why do we subject American students to this ordeal? I found myself moving toward the strong view that we shouldn't. My question extends beyond algebra and applies more broadly to the usual mathematics sequence from geometry to calculus. State, regions, and legislatures, and much of the public take it as self-evident that every young person should be made to master polynomial functions and parametric equations. There are many defenses of algebra and the virtue of learning it. Most of them sound reasonable on first hearing. Many of them I once accepted. But the more I examine them, the clearer it seems that they are largely or wholly wrong, unsupported by research or evidence, or based on wishful logic. I'm not talking about quantitative skills, critical for informed citizenship and personal finance, for a very different ballgame. This debate matters. Making mathematics mandatory prevents us from discovering and developing young talent. In the interest of maintaining rigor, we're actually depleting our pool of brain power. I say this as a writer and a social scientist whose work relies heavily on the use of numbers. My aim is not to spare students from a difficult subject, but to call attention to real problems we are causing by misdirecting precious resources. The toll mathematics takes begins early. To our nation's shame, one in fourth ninth graders failed to finish high school. In South Carolina, 34% fell away in 2008-2009. For Nevada, it was 45%. Most of the educators I've talked with cite algebra as the major academic reason. And that's where I said, I stopped. Okay, sorry.
So let me first
this
say,
guy is
I went to the bottom of the article. He's an emeritus professor of political science at Queens College City, University of New York.
Okay.
And he wrote a book called Higher Education, How Colleges Are Wasting Our Money and Failing Our Kids and What We Can Do About It. So I will say there are a couple things here. First of all, and I have not looked at the research here that maybe he has, and I have not read this whole article. I just heard what you just said. But there are a couple things here. One, first of all, let's compare to other countries.
Exactly.
Like, is this that big a problem everywhere else?
No.
And now, on the one hand, I will say what a lot of countries do that we don't is much earlier on track kids to certain types of education that emphasize one thing or another. Like, there's the college-bound group. There's the vocational-bound group.
That's correct.
And I think there is something to be said about tailoring the education more closely to the abilities of the kids, their strength, what they're probably going to end up being in a career on. And maybe there is some argument that, you know, algebra, calculus, etc. aren't needed in many potential directions. However, I think really here, when you compare internationally and you compare to other places, that's not the problem. The problem, if people are failing algebra in high school, it's not because, oh my God, they don't need algebra, why are we wasting time on this? It's because we already failed them earlier in the process.
That's correct.
And
yes,
they are not prepared to do that because they have not already been taught the necessary critical thinking skills to get there. Critical and analytical thinking skills. And in part, that's because math, there's debates on this all over the country, but the way math is taught in lots of places is horrible. It's not taught in ways that leave the kids with an actual understanding of what the fuck they're doing. You know, you teach them cookbook skills.
It's rote repetition and memorization.
It's either rote repetition or memorization, or there's been a trend also to sort of soften things up and treat everything in terms of, you know, you figure it out by discovering it, and you do this, you do that. Like, there are a whole bunch of different approaches that have been tried, many of which are awful. And they're sort of the fad of the week and things like that, rather than really concentrating on what works and leaves this knowledge in people in a way that's usable and is retained over time. And you know, there's in the primary and secondary education system in the United States, there is a lot of resistance to sort of deciding what to do based on sort of concrete evidence, as opposed to sort of what's politically popular at the time. And that's it's done bad things in math. Frankly, it's done bad things in all subjects. I mean, just talk about how watered down like history books are and things like that.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Because you know, the textbook publishers want to publish one textbook nationally, but they have to water it down so that it doesn't offend anybody anywhere, any place. So like any controversial subject, forget about it. You know, history's controversial. History is bad. Science is bad in general, not just math. I mean, in many parts of the country, you still have this whole debate about whether or not you fucking teach evolution. You know,
really,
you know, and anyway, so I think if you have a lot of kids having trouble with algebra by the time they get to high school, it's not because algebra isn't a skill that's needed. And you can argue, like, most people in lots of jobs will never be called upon to do the kinds of algebra that's in a high school algebra course. Okay, I admit that. But, you know, it's all about, it really all boils down to the critical and analytical thinking that is behind that. It's about how to think in such a way that you are being rational, that you are making critical decisions, that you can think quantitatively, because frankly, if you're not thinking quantitatively about the world, you're just reacting emotionally and irrationally.
Well,
you know? Anyway, like I said, there's an argument that not everybody needs to take algebra.
I agree. I mean, maybe, you know what?
But I think the fact that you've got lots of people failing algebra is not the problem is not answered by, well, then don't make them take algebra.
Right.
The problem is answered by, okay, how did we fuck up their earlier education so that they couldn't do algebra? Because even if everybody isn't going to need to do algebra, frankly, everybody should be able to take an algebra class and learn it if their preparation up to that point has been decent. I'm of course accepting people who are like mentally challenged and other things like that. But you know, the normal individual at a high school level should be able to do this stuff.
I just think that this is the kind of shit, okay, like you mentioned, okay?
We dumb everything
fucking down to a way that, you know, we make it to the lowest common denominator. Hey, let's not teach them fucking anything. Let's just let them go through fucking high school without learning fucking anything because it's too hard. And, you know, I get this moron saying this, but right now we're having a problem where we can't turn out – we don't turn out enough engineers, scientists, and other things in order to do certain work, which we're – you know, which our universities right now are basically educating mostly foreign students instead of people from the U.S. in order to do these jobs.
And you hear tons of complaints from people, and I can't pull one up specifically now, but I know I've read it in the past, where people at – the professors at colleges in technical fields – so science, engineering, math, etc., are complaining that the people coming out of the American high school system just are not prepared.
Right.
They do not come into college having what they need. Now, again, there's a whole other argument. Lots of people may not need college. Okay, fine. But
that's fine. That's a separate thing.
It's a separate thing. But I acknowledge also, by the way, there are people for whom sort of mathematics and analytics comes naturally. You know,
I don't know who we could be talking about here.
You know, okay, yes. To me, this kind of stuff just... I understood.
Sam and I in college, he's fucking talking to me about calculus. Like, he's talking about you know, I don't know, like ABCs, okay? A 2 plus 2. I can't look at it. But let me tell you something. I fucking did not quit on it, okay? It was a challenge, yes. But I fucking killed myself when I got through the stupid class, okay? Even though I never used it later, and even though I wasn't going to be an engineer, because that taught me about how to deal with difficult fucking situations.
That's another point. Yeah.
Shh.
Yeah, learning how to do something that does not come naturally to you and you don't want to do and you don't understand the value of is a skill you will have to use time and time again.
The rest of your fucking life! And I got this asshole writing, oh, let's just not teach them fucking anything. What the hell? You know, we shouldn't force anybody to do something that they're... But the problem is that the rationale is completely wrong. The rationale is completely wrong, okay? That we are ill-preparing people, like you said, at an early age, and that's why they can't fucking get to do this later. And so, the solution is not to just stop teaching this shit. The solution is to fix the problem, okay?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that really is missing in a lot of education is the... Because to me, all of the individual subjects all should... sort of aim back down at how to teach people to think.
Right.
How to teach people to think critically, how to teach people to analyze information and make good decisions based on that information. And some of that is quantitative and mathematical, some of that is not. And yes, there's a good healthy dose of appreciating culture and all of those things in there as well, and that's very important. But it all comes down to, how can we end up with people who are well-rounded, know about the world around them, and know how to fucking think?
Yeah.
You know, and so if we spend lots of time saying, that's hard, let's not do that. Oh, that's not politically correct, let's not mention that.
Dude, right.
Oh, that's controversial, let's not go
there. Let's not talk about that.
Oh, you know, well, this method of teaching... it tends to work, but is hard. So let's do this other method that sounds warm and fluffy, but doesn't actually work.
Right.
No, come on. And of course, there can be lots of debate on what the right methodology is. Do you have high stakes testing? Do you not have high stakes testing? Do you have standardized testing? Do you not? Do you have lesson plans that are same across the entire country? Do you have things that are differentiated on a local level? Blah, blah, blah. You can have all kinds of debate on that. But I think, you know, should there be teacher unions? You know, there's all kinds of things to debate, and I'm not even going into those. But I think
at
the high level, the theme has been that over the last, it's been a trend that's been going around a long time. Every once in a while, you see these posts come out on Facebook or on the web or somewhere showing, like, here's a test 8th graders took in 1872 or something. that a high school senior wouldn't know how to answer today, you know?
You know, of course, fewer people went to school back then, so it's probably a different group of people. There's a whole bunch of things. But my point is, look, when I went to high school, I went to a high school that, despite small, we had a very big cross-section of people economically, okay? All right? It was from totally different backgrounds to everybody. However, I will tell you something. You look at the product of that right now as an adult. I went to a wedding like about a couple of months ago where a friend of ours from high school, we were a group of us there. And one person that met us from the U.S., what they remarked was how everybody that went to my high school, or the vast majority, became successful at something, okay? This was not like, you know, we didn't wind up with all these, like, half of a class of a bunch of fucking losers not doing anything, okay? And they were all from very different backgrounds. And the thing about it was that the fucking school was challenging as all shit. And we took a lot of shit that a lot of people hated that we didn't want to do. But the point was that it pushed the shit out of us to do stuff. And that's how you get people to be smarter. Not by fucking taking away difficult subjects that just say, oh, it's too hard, don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, don't even get me started on this whole self-esteem movement where we have to make things so that people feel good about themselves. Yes,
self-esteem is built by fucking doing something right and taking pride in it, damn it.
And not just doing something right, not just doing something and succeeding it, but doing something that's hard and difficult and where there was a chance of failure.
Right.
You know, like, succeeding in something that was built to be exceptionally easy so there was no way to fail it isn't helping anybody. You know, and in fact, like, I'll tell you, a specific example, my daughter right now, we'd had her going to a private school where one of their big things was adapting to the way people learn, because she was having a hard time, like, learning to, you know, do all her homework on time and just have the discipline she needed for that. And so she was going to this school where their whole thing was, we will adapt. So if you have a hard time learning this way, we will help you learn this way. A lot of individual classes, a lot of one-on-one. After a year and a half, she decided she, on her own, mark you, she decided she was done with them because every time she felt challenged by something, rather than help her get over the challenge, they made it easier.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
And so she's like, this is not working. I'm done with this. I want to do something harder. So she went into a program where instead of going to high school classes at a high school, she's taking all her classes at the local community college. And I'll tell you, it's been rough. It's been rough because she wasn't prepared for it, you know, and, you know, she had to drop out of some classes. She failed some other classes, but it's actually pushing her. And I think she's doing a little bit better this time around, I hope, cross my fingers. But the point is, like, they actually held her to standards and said, you know, this is what you have to do. We're not going to hold your fucking hand. You know, here's what you have to do. If you're going to succeed, you're going to do it. We're not going to do it for you. We're not going to coddle you. You figure out what you need to do. You get it done. And, you know, whether or not she's doing as well academically as I would like, that message is starting to, like, sink in, you know?
But listen, but let me tell you something. The one thing is the grades are one thing. What you learn is another thing, okay? Because It's like my nephew who fucking graduated from high school with a 4.0-something GPA down here, okay? All right? But to be honest with you, I go and I quiz him on what the fuck he learned. He didn't learn shit, right? Okay? I'm like, I had a lower GPA in my fucking high school, and I learned 10 times more than what he learned leaving high school. What the fuck is the point of, like, having them achieve 4.0 GPAs if they're not learning shit?
Yeah. And the same thing. I mean, potentially, you can leave high school barely passing, having learned a lot of valuable things. Now, I'm not encouraging people to
get by on C's, but it's not that. I mean, if it's, you know, look, okay. If you do it like when we went to college, for example, where a C meant that you were average, okay, all right?
Yeah.
That's fine. That means that you were up against whatever the hardest stuff that was thrown at you. And even in that class, what you did was the average of what everybody could do. You were not the brightest one in the class at it, but you weren't the worst, okay? That's perfectly fine, okay? That's not a problem. Yeah. I don't see a problem with that. If the class was hard... Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, and that was the point. I mean, when I was at Carnegie Mellon, I got C's in calculus. Okay? I got season calculus and I got season statistics, okay? Now, you know what? I was fucking killing myself in the stupid class, okay? But against the people that I was in college, that my I am not as good at that. And my effort, despite that I killed myself, was average. Yeah. That's fine, okay? That is not, you know, I don't want to get a fucking A thrown at me by not doing something.
Right. Like, if you'd gotten an A in that class, you'd have been cheated, really.
I would have been cheated, because I certainly would have been. It would have been stupid. Oh, you really tried very hard. Let's give you an A. Fuck no! I'm not that good!
Yeah, it doesn't really matter how well you actually do. It's just that you tried hard.
Right! I'm not that good at it! It's a good thing I know. That's why I'm not a computer science or... I'm not in that. I didn't, you know, that's not my route in life. However, I am very good at other stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, so I think we've actually killed our time. So for Citigroup, let's just take 10 seconds. The former CEO of Citigroup said that banks that size are too large.
Well, basically, yeah, that's what he said. He came out and said that the banks are too big and that we should downsize them. And he was the biggest guy to propose the financial supermarket. I think that it's just kind of coming back for a circle. It's just a lot of people have been criticizing him because I think a lot of people have said that the problem that's happened has nothing with this stuff has nothing to do with the banks being that big. And so that's where a lot of the controversy has erupted. But I think that at least it shows that there is a big debate like right now whether a lot of the stuff that we did in the financial industry over the last 15 years made sense or not. And the fact that the biggest proponent of financial integration and like growth is like now going and like proposing the opposite.
You know, I think there's a lot to be said for the fact that, the old-fashioned system where you have banks take people's deposits for savings and checkings accounts, and they use that money to give loans, and they keep those loans, they don't sell them or anything, and then they service those loans and use that the interest off that to pay interest on the checkings and savings accounts, and that's all they fucking do. There's something to be said for that model. It's boring.
Yeah, I know.
It's boring as fuck, but it worked.
But I think that one of the things that I was reading an article counter to that, and they were talking about the fact that, let's face it, over the last 30 or 40 years, look, the guys that fucked up for the most part in the financial crisis were investment banks that were by themselves, okay, all right, that mm-hmm. had no banking. So you're talking about the Lehman Brothers and that kind of stuff. They had no banking. And then on the flip side, they were just plain old banks, okay? You think about the SNL crisis in the late 80s. You think about the, Washington Mutual, Wachovia, all of these banks. They had no investment banks, okay? So it's a little bit like I understand that people are trying to look for something that to go back to some level of safety. But we haven't shown that either one has been worked. I think that what somebody mentioned today is that the problem is that, okay, you have banks that are independent, but we don't have enough oversight, or we don't treat them like they're a fucking monopoly. I mean, they should be allowed very little risk, and they should be allowed to be – they have need to be highly regulated, and they need to be like almost like an electric utility that is regulated in what margin you can make. Otherwise, you wind up exposing the taxpayers and everybody else to this kind of shit. Because that's how the system is. Because otherwise, nobody will trust the banks if the taxpayers aren't backing them up. I mean, we wind up with what happens in other countries where banks aren't covered by the taxpayers, and then when a bank goes belly up, then everybody's broke and it's a fucking disaster. So I don't know. I think the point about it is that we haven't found what the right formula is. Because over the last 40 or 50, ever since the Depression, we've still had a number of big banks goes bust. We had a massive SNL crisis in the late 80s and early 90s. And we wound up with a big bank bust again later on. Both were under very different circumstances, but we haven't really found the right solution to this whole situation.
Barter.
Barter? Barter. No banks? Fuck the banks?
No banks, no cash. All barter.
All barter. There we go.
All barter. You want me to do work for you? You give me a goat.
Well, right now, I'll tell you this, that right now, let's face it, I just you know, one of the things about shit right now is that down here in South Florida, 70%, 75% of real estate transactions are being done all cash. Okay?
Right.
So basically, we fucking eliminated the pegs right now for the fucking most part.
Well, and I think there's something to be said for, you know, that as well, is the, you know, there are previous generations who were very, very averse to taking on debt. And, you know, we got very debt happy, and I'm not necessarily saying it's best to go back to absolutely zero debt as the norm, although I'm not sure that might be okay, but at least less. You know, I think we're still in an over-debted situation.
You know what, I think that it used to be, for example, you know what, when people used to go and buy furniture or buy this or that, I was thinking about how people used to do it 20, 30, 40 years ago. Well, you used to go, like, you bought something and you borrowed money from, say, the furniture store, and they're the ones that went and, like, financed you know, getting that stuff over 36 months. Over the last 20 or 30 years, people started, like, doing stuff where they just, oh, I have home equity, I don't care, I'll just write a check from the home equity line. And didn't measure what that meant. Oh, the value of the house will always go up, so it doesn't matter. I don't have to pay it back. And I think that it's kind of a model that honestly didn't serve us very well, you know?
Well, even that, comparing store cards to just your generic credit card too, going back further, it somehow seems like a lower barrier to using that credit card than store-specific cards, you know? And I've never even had a store-specific card. They were out of vogue by the time I was growing up.
Yeah.
But
that's the way people. But that's the way people did stuff. Because if you had a store-specific card, you couldn't go with that card to every other fucking store and, like, get in hock. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, let alone, like, things like layaway and things like that, where you actually had to pay the damn thing first.
Right, before you even got it. I think that, and you've seen a return of layaway. You've seen a return of some of that stuff. I mean, I think that that's, you know. Maybe it's just a healthier way of being able to get things done. I mean, I'm, you know.
I mean, as a general rule, I mean, and there may be some exceptions where taking on debt makes sense. Maybe it makes sense for a home mortgage. I don't know. But as a general rule, people don't go wrong that much by saying, hey, if I can't afford to buy it cash, I can't afford it.
But the thing is, here's the big thing about this, though. You got to remember that by doing this, we are significantly slowing down with the American economy as
well. Well, yeah, and
humongously.
Well,
okay,
and that's the thing, though. Like, you do have a trade-off. I mean, it's been shown fairly conclusively that by having very loose credit and letting people get loans for all kinds of things, they can it juices the economy, not only do consumers buy things, but people engage in business ventures that they wouldn't otherwise and things like that.
Right.
But and so that speeds up the economy. But the trade-off is that it's all built on this house of cards of debt, and so you have bigger crashes. I mean, how do you get rid of crashes in the economy? You get rid of the booms.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway,
all right, we're done.
Oh,
we're
out. I gotta give the one other thing because we had feedback this week.
We had more feedback. Feedback. Okay.
We had feedback. I apologize for missing it earlier.
We gotta do the feedback at the beginning of the show.
Well, you know, I was gonna do it as part of the Romney stuff because he mentioned that, but we'll see you in a second, Alex. Alex is being pulled away from me. A listener named Mark. Sent me a note actually through Facebook. Did you see this? And he sent an article to prediction Romney will not be the Republican nominee.
Yes.
And basically this was speculation as to the reason Romney has not released his full taxes. And the speculation is that there was an amnesty, a tax amnesty a while ago for people who were using Swiss bank accounts and the like as tax havens. But that amnesty required that people file a form that detailed in exquisite detail exactly what all their foreign holdings were. So, this was an amnesty for previously working around tax laws. So it filing this amnesty admitted that you were cheating earlier, essentially. And as part of that admission, you had to give all kinds of extra detail. And so apparently a lot of people in the high net worth class took this amnesty because basically in the past there had been this loophole that everybody considered to be, you know, a loophole that wasn't enforced, blah, blah, blah. So you'd be stupid not to take advantage of it. But it still was technically not what you were supposed to be doing. It's like right now on if you live in a if you buy something in another state that doesn't have sales tax, you're technically supposed to report that in your taxes for your local state to say that you bought the item in the other place and pay taxes on it locally. So stuff like that, nobody does it. And
I don't think all states have that.
Most states do. Florida does.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I remember from being in Florida, for instance, Washington State has this. So, like, if you try to get away from the taxes by buying something out of state, you're supposed to report it and pay local sales tax on it anyway. But nobody does, right? This was the same kind of thing, except it was on foreign bank accounts, and there was an amnesty program. You had to admit that you'd done it, give all kinds of details, and then they wouldn't go after you. So the speculation is that Romney did that in one of his previous tax returns, and that's why he's not doing it. The article that he linked to was from Paul Abrams on Huffington Post, and they speculated that if this came out, this would be a big deal, and he wouldn't actually end up being the nominee even now. He'd drop out of the race. He'd pick a vice president, drop out, and then the VP candidate would become the candidate. I had actually seen this mentioned before this, but everybody else who mentioned it thought, yeah, it would be another embarrassment, but it wouldn't be a big deal. It wouldn't cause him to drop out or anything. And I think I agree with that assessment, if this is even what's going on. And then finally, Mark said, love the podcast, by the way. So,
well, that's good. Feedback. Well, here, okay, well, just one final thing on that. Look, if this thing comes out, it's going to be it is going to blow up like a thermonuclear bomb.
Okay.
If that is correct. I really don't see how this is going to be minimized. I really, really think that if that's the case, there's going to be a lot of trouble.
You think there'd be a lot of trouble over an esoteric tax issue where he...
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. I mean, think of how it looks to all, you know, to the average American. I mean, this son of a bitch is like fucking hiding money in Switzerland and like not paying taxes. I mean, I'm telling you, I really don't see how this really does not become a massive problem if this is true. Of course, which we don't know it's true. So, yeah. We'll see.
We'll see. Okay. If anybody else has any feedback or comments, email me at ablesme@ablesme.com. That's ABULSME. Check out my blog, too, ablesme.com. Or if you want to avoid the family pictures and stuff, election2012.ablesme.com has only the election stuff. And in the meantime, everybody have a good week, and we will see you next week for yet another show. Yvonne says he thinks he can make it before they go to the hospital.
I think I can make it. I'm going to try.
Okay. So goodbye, everyone. Have a good week. Goodbye. 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 Later.